So thank you very much for having me here. I'm going to talk about a research project that I've done with my colleague Luke Schaefer in the School of Social Work at the University of Michigan, and Mert Axu, who is the Dean of the Dental School of University of Detroit Mercy. And here's the disclosure. We didn't have any, there's no relationships. So I want to start out by saying I think probably this audience here is quite familiar with the concept of mid-level dental providers, or dental therapists as they're typically known. They work in a lot of countries around the world. They perform a limited set of irreversible procedures, historically performed only by dentists. And increasingly, at least in developed countries, they're also duly trained as hygienists. A main reason for adding dental therapists to the workforce is to improve access to care for the underserved. But since in this country they work in a very limited fashion, so far only in Minnesota and Alaska, although recently approved in Maine, they're not very well understood either by the American public or American dentists for that matter. So despite the fact that most research indicates that the provision of care by dental therapists is safe and of a comparable technical quality to that of dentists for their scope of practice, a lot of U.S. dentists are still dubious and argue that it will be sort of setting up a two-tiered system of care, one for the more affluent who can see dentists, and then more vulnerable populations would be relegated to dental therapists. Whether patients feel this way is sort of unclear. We can learn from some prior research that was done on the American public's view toward nurse practitioners and physician assistants back when those mid-level medical providers were new. And there was at that time a lack of understanding among the public about the training of these new mid-level providers, as well as sort of a limited acceptance of or willingness to see them with regard to their full scope of practice. And more recent research from the UK, where dental therapists were just in the last decade or so more widely integrated into the workforce, shows a similar feeling among the general population. So we do know, however, that once patients see these mid-levels, they are quite satisfied with it. But this is not really the same question as before seeing a mid-level that you're not familiar with, you know, how comfortable are you? And so we're interested in this question because we want to gauge the attitudes of potential patients because of the fact that if dental therapists were to be added to the workforce with the intent of improving access, their ability to do that is actually going to be limited by patients' willingness to go see them. So to address this question, we developed a survey. It was based on a literature review of all the studies of social acceptability of nurse practitioners and physician assistants in this country when they were new, and dental therapists in the UK when they were new. We asked people about their oral health experiences, their if they had experienced an inability to receive necessary treatment, their willingness to receive any of seven specific services from a new provider for either themselves or for their children, if they had children. And for those who said they wouldn't want to see a mid-level provider for any of these, we had some follow-up questions about several potential mitigating factors. The definition of the mid-level provider that we used, I'll just read it so you understand what we were talking about, because there's a lot of different models out there. Some parts are more or less the same, but then there's lots of variations. So we described this practitioner by saying a dental therapist is like a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, but for dentistry. They're in between a hygienist and a dentist because they can do all the things a dental hygienist can do and some of the things a dentist can do. Dental therapists are allowed to assess the situation, do fillings, pull teeth, and a few other procedures. They're not allowed to do complicated procedures or treat more serious problems in your mouth. Only a dentist can do that.
dental therapists are taught to fill and pull teeth the same way dentists are, and they need to pass an exam to get licensed just like a dentist does. They work under the supervision of a dentist and can talk with him or her in person or by phone or other electronic means if questions come up. Right now, dental therapists work in about 50 countries. They also work in Minnesota. Other states are thinking about allowing them to work to try to make it easier for people to get dental care. We administered this survey in the University of Detroit Mercy General Dental Clinic over 9 visits in the summer of 2013. We had 3 researchers there. They attempted to approach every adult in the waiting room, and on certain days, when they were doing screening, lining up outside, talk to some of the people in the line. We had surveys available in English, Spanish, and Arabic. In Detroit, Arabic is a predominant language and ethnic group. We rotated the survey administration style between self-administered, in which people would read it and fill it out themselves, and oral, in which we would read the questions to people. And each case, the respondent had the option to ask to do it the other way if they wanted to. And we ended up getting surveys from 628 adults. They were either patients or they were waiting room companions, meaning they had come with the person who was a patient or oftentimes a mother bringing children. This was an 81% response rate. The 19% who said they didn't want to participate, typically was they were worried that they would be in the middle of this when they were called for their appointment. So they said, or they had children that were running around making them crazy. And it resulted in 600 usable surveys. So who were these people? 62% of our respondents were female, 40% African American, 40% white. 20% were seniors, 8% were young adults under the age of 25, so most were working-age adults. They were roughly evenly divided in terms of their insurance status, 37% uninsured, 30% had Medicaid, 31% had private insurance. 40% had children. Over 40%, this is not on the slide, but over 40% had indicated that they had skipped needed dental care in the last year, and of those, over 60% said it was due to cost. And also, just in terms of the makeup, 35% of the sample were companions, 65% were patients themselves. And among those companions, however, 40% indicated that they felt that they were also in need of dental care. What did we find? So after providing that description that I gave you before, we presented it as a duly trained hygienist therapist. Patients were asked if they thought they would see one or if they had children, take their children to see one for any of 7 proposed procedures. And those procedures were fillings, extractions, shots, caps and crowns, advice and information, explanations of treatments, and in emergencies if a dentist wasn't available. And we got these list of 7 based on these were similar set of questions was asked in a series of studies in the UK, so we wanted to be able to sort of compare how our results lined up with past findings. In calculating these percentages, we treated non-responses as a no. For example, for the question about fillings, we got 575 out of the 600 people answered that question. So we treated those 25 as saying no when we calculated the percentages. So for 6 out of the 7 different procedures, we find that the respondents were actually quite comfortable. In fact, over 75% said yes, they would be willing to see a dental therapist for that particular procedure. They were most comfortable receiving advice and information about their teeth or explanations of treatment options, though nearly as many were comfortable with the idea of seeing this proposed provider in an emergency or to have a simple cavity filled. In fact, 77% said they would be willing to see a dental therapist for filling. caps and crowns was the only procedure that over which the respondents were really evenly divided. And overall, 40% of the respondents said they would be comfortable seeing a dental therapist for all seven of these procedures. Less than 5% said they wouldn't want to see one for any of them. And then when we ask people with children if they would take their children, we find that with the exception of extractions, and this is probably because it's most likely baby teeth, they were slightly less comfortable taking their children than they were to going themselves. But still, with the exception of caps and crowns, it was over two-thirds were willing to take their children for each of these procedures. For those people who were uncomfortable with even one of the proposed treatments, we asked some follow-up questions. And again, these were drawn from the past literature in terms of what kind of things impacted people's opinions. And so we asked do they think they would change their mind if they could get an appointment more quickly, if seeing this new type of provider meant they could get an appointment more quickly, or if it cost less, or if it was easier to get to the office, or if this new provider accepted their insurance, or if a dentist had made the plan and told them that, yes, the dental therapist could do the work. And again, we treated non-responses here as no. So for each one of these questions, at least half indicated that they might reconsider, and nearly two-thirds said they would if the dentist had made the treatment plan and said it was okay. Costing less and accepting their insurance were the next two highest reasons. And again, those with children appear to be slightly less likely to consider changing their mind than were people for themselves and their own treatment. And I just wanted to say, too, that I do realize that, at least in this country, the cost typically does not vary between whether you see a dental therapist or a dentist. It's a cost for a procedure. But we asked these questions, one, because they had been asked this way in a lot of the previous studies, and we wanted to be able to compare again. But also we thought it would provide some insight into just how important cost was and how that played into people's decisions. So the other thing we did with these data was we ran some logistic regressions for each procedure to try to sort of, and also for the sort of combined yes, no, comfortable with everything. We wanted to sort of see if we could tell what factors might make somebody more likely to be willing to see a dental therapist. All the predictor, for each model, the predictor variables were always the same, which was gender, race, insurance status, age, education, having skipped care, and the survey administration style. And I'm not going to put all the tables up there, but just highlight some of the key findings here. So basically, all else equal, one of the strongest predictors of being willing to be treated by a dental therapist is being uninsured. Someone who was uninsured was 1.5 to 2 times as likely as somebody with private insurance to say they would go see a dental therapist, depending on the procedure. Seniors were only about half as likely to be comfortable with the idea as younger adults. Those with the highest and the lowest levels of education were somewhat less likely to be comfortable with the idea than those in the middle. And those who had skipped needed care in the past were generally more likely to be comfortable with the idea of a dental therapist. For example, they were about 1.5 times as likely as someone who had never skipped care to have a dental therapist place caps or crowns, and about 1.5 times as likely to be comfortable with a dental therapist for all seven procedures. Okay. So in terms of how our findings sort of fit with the past research on the social acceptability of mid-levels, qualitatively, our results mirror pretty closely findings from the earlier studies about nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and dental therapists elsewhere. people tend to be less comfortable with more invasive procedures, less comfortable with treating children or with the idea of this practitioner treating children, and they seem to be willing to modify their feeling if a dentist or trusted physician has said it was okay or if the cost would be lower to them. In terms of sort of overall comfort level, while again qualitatively similar to past studies, the overall comfort level seemed to be a bit higher in our group than was the case in some of these previous studies where, for example, a lot of studies of the nurse practitioners and physician assistants found that up to 20% of those queried would refuse to see the new practitioner. And we sort of have thought about this and attribute it to the fact that population today probably has more experience with mid-levels, whether it's seeing nurse practitioners, physician assistants, dental hygienists that back 20, 30 years ago, people weren't as familiar with the idea. In any case, we do know that since all of these mid-levels do enjoy high patient satisfaction now, it sort of does suggest that if dental therapists were to become more common, that any current reservations would gradually be reduced over time. As was the case in previous studies, those with a perceived need or lack of access in terms of being uninsured or said they had to skip care, they were actually more, rather than being sort of more suspicious of a mid-level, they were actually more comfortable with the idea. So, sort of to sum up, our main conclusions are from our findings suggest that as a tool for improving access to care, and we know it's not the only one, but as a tool for improving access to care, the introduction of dually trained dental therapists is a strategy that the public, and in particular those lacking regular care, appears to be, on the whole, comfortable with. But we also know that given how important the recommendation of a trusted doctor or dentist is to changing the mind of skeptical patients or potential patients, if opponents of this workforce model, which does include at the moment most state dental organizations and the American Dental Association, though not the Association of Public Health Dentistry, if these groups continue to sort of argue that the addition of a mid-level provider will create a two-tiered system, it may actually create public doubt where it doesn't already exist.
This is just contact information if anyone needs it, but thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Phillips. So I would invite the audience to pose any questions they had about any of the presentations. Questions? Yes.
So it's all of the children, it was both children and adults, but all of the children were able to be seen by the hygienist in the city. The practice law in California, the advanced practice hygienists can work independently and see both children and adults in a variety of different settings. So they could all be seen. The 65% was that 65% of them, by the data, were able to be kept healthy with the hygienist being the only one to physically touch them. So, yes, that does depend on the scope of practice laws, and if there are states that are contemplating doing this kind of thing, there has to be some kind of evaluation of the regulatory environment, and we've had to fix some things in California through that legislation. You might have to fix additional things in your state to be able to do this style of thing.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. You want to come up? You want to come up?
I'm a very open moderator.
Thank you. I have a question about the virtual dental home. I'm wondering, are children maybe being exposed to more x-rays than they would otherwise be, because the x-rays have to go to the cloud dentist to be reviewed, whereas maybe X-rays maybe wouldn't have been indicated because you could, you know, if otherwise, or do you have any history of their last X-rays, or is there a risk of kids getting overexposed? And is it my understanding that the hygienist or whatever the person is called doing the procedures at the school is applying temporary fillings? And what happens then? Are those children referred for permanent fillings, and is there any follow-up to ensure that they are getting whatever care that can't be done in the scope of that practice outside for that? And I'm wondering what the time lapse is. All right, well, it's connected. So if the information goes to the cloud dentist, what is the response time? Is it immediate? Is it a few days? Is it a week? So, thank you.
Thank you.
I'll try to answer some of those. So the first question about x-rays, we've actually spent quite a bit of time with the hygienists in the program to retrain them on the appropriateness of when to take x-rays. So we actually err on the side of taking fewer x-rays. And when the complete diagnostic set of records goes to the dentist, and they'll say that the hygienist decided that they didn't need to take x-rays on that child, but the dentist says, actually, I do want you to, then they will. But they try to err on the side of taking fewer x-rays than necessary. And then, obviously, if they had a dentist of record prior to the virtual dental home, we do try to get a hold of those x-rays, so we try to minimize the number we take. The second question was about the temporary restoration. So the temporary restorations are placed on teeth when directed to do so by the dentist, and then we actually monitor those IPRs, that's what they're called, through this dental home. So we continue to take photos and x-rays if necessary, so the dentist is able to keep track of that patient and decide, is it someone who still does need to come in, because maybe that IPR is not appropriately placed or just falling out, something. But we just monitor, and when appropriate, we do refer to to be replaced with a permanent filling.
The interim therapeutic restoration, we're using the definition from the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry. And in fact, the technique, which is in the worldwide literature, is described as the intramedic restorative technique, same technique, just a different name for it. And the American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry chose, it says in their policy statement, chose that name to emphasize the interim nature of it. But in fact, most of those restorations are not being replaced. So that, particularly in deciduous teeth, the restorations don't last as long as the deciduous tooth does, and even in some permanent teeth, they're just being monitored over time. So I think temporary, it's a kind of temporary restoration, at least by that definition, but these restorations can last a long time. They're not all replaced. Unfortunately, I'd love to be able to answer that question in about a half hour, because the science is really clear now that this interim therapeutic restoration is not a second-tier restoration. It's actually a durable restoration in many circumstances. There's really strong systematic reviews now that show that this style of restoration is not removing all the decay or simply carries with less onomer, produces less pulpal symptoms, less pulpal problems later on, less pain that people report, less fear. So there are many, outside of a community-based workforce model, many dentists are beginning to realize now that that's actually a preferable style of restoration in places where it can be placed. So there's nothing second to about it.
Before I take a question from the audience, Dr. Dinard, do you have a question?
It won't reach you.
Not so much a question as a comment to the last talk. I have worked with nurse practitioners since the first nurse practitioner graduated from the training program at the University of Minnesota in the early 70s. I've worked with them, I've hired them, and I can say unequivocally that they are as competent as the physicians are in doing primary care. They have the same caseload, they have the same outcomes, the patients prefer them much, much more. They are hardly ever sued, they know when to ask for help. And I think that, and I'm pretty sure that if you went back and looked in the newspapers in the late 60s, the AMA was equally opposed to the nurse practitioners as a two-tiered system. Now, I don't know a doctor, whether it's a cardiologist, an endocrinologist, or an orthopedist, who doesn't have at least one nurse practitioner working with him in his office. That's working with him, not for him. And there's a collaboration. And I'd like to think that over time, the same thing will happen with a dental therapist, that they will have equally good outcomes as the dentists do, and they will be much preferred. And just as an anecdote, I ran an FQHC for 15 years. I had lots of complaints about the doctors. I had only one complaint about a nurse practitioner. A patient was very upset, and she couldn't see her nurse practitioner that day. She had to see a doctor.
Thank you, Dr. Dinard.